Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. To the Carpcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
Hello, and welcome to episode 40. Coming of age. We've hit the milestone. Live from the banks of Cromwell Lake, where everybody's just deserted us on the first ever Carpcast social.
What a weekend it was.
It was a fantastic weekend. I hope there's not too much wind noise on this, because the wind's getting up a bit. We've got the A1 behind us. But first of all, I'd like to say thanks to a great group of lads that have come down. Bloody airplane. Stick your V's up at it, Mark.
I did.
Do one airplane.
I wasn't crashed now, I flagged it off.
So we've got four rods out between us. Absolute last knockings. We're packing up in a minute. We're packed up by the rods. So if you hear a buzzer go, then
it'll be mine.
Yeah, Mark's just poked someone else's swim. It's just chucked one rod out. But the last time he did that in that peg on that spot, he did catch a fish, so... You never know. We can maybe repeat Adam Penning's.
Oh, that would be good. That's got to wait till the last 5 minutes of the recording.
Yeah.
A few bleeps and we're in. My balls will bounce. My indicators, that is. Nothing else.
Yes. I know it's a bit of a far jog to your rods, but...
You put the barrow in between me and my rod, so if it does go off, I'm just going to write everything off in between me and the rods. Panic will set in. Then I'll wind in rosy.
So we're gonna cover the Carpcast social next week. We've got a live recording of Julian Cundiff, and we did some drunken listeners' questions where we just discussed. We rambled a bit. I'll have to check that it's airable, but that'll be next week's show. This week we've got Ali Hamidi coming up. I spoke to him this week about the big fish off and other stuff, and he's going to be coming up later in the show. What else? Have we seen anything on the net this week?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Oh, one thing that did make me chuckle on I think it was the Cuttle Mill Facebook page.
Yes, I saw that.
Who was familiar with the lake, there was a lovely house at the bottom end of the lake. The nearest swim to it would be, what, Peg One?
Yep.
Looks like someone had a bit of a very wayward cast from Peg One and put a window through. You shouldn't laugh because it's an expensive mistake they've made, but it did make me chuckle because you've got to be pretty out of it to make that mistake. It's not even close to the water.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were in the house or not. I mean, they actually called the person an idiot, and it said some idiot rather than... I can understand you're frustrated. They said it was going to cost them £400 to replace the pane. They were quite nice-looking panes.
Nice leaded windows, weren't they?
Yeah. They said it was going to cost them £400, but I mean, you know, that's the risk of having a house right on the lake, I guess. You know, especially if you're going to use that lake to make money and charge people to fish it. I guess once in a blue moon, something like that's going to happen. But calling the person an idiot, I mean, they may well be an idiot. But I don't know, I don't think that's really right.
If someone put a lead through my window, I think I'd be calling them something stronger.
Yeah, we differ that. I mean, you know, that's the nature of your business, really, isn't it? I guess, you know, if you if you light barbecues for a living and you burn your hand, it's just a risk that's associated.
That's in my wife's forearms when she's worked in the kitchens at work. She's
exactly.
Got scars and burns all the way up them.
Yeah, I think it's a hazard of a situation. I don't know.
Occupational hazard.
I didn't like calling him an idiot, but I mean, maybe they just are, and maybe it was malicious. Who knows? Because I don't. But yeah, it did make me chuckle. anything? I'll tell you what I saw on the net this week.
It's on the net. It must be true.
A highly contentious water in the northwest, known as Pendle View, up in a beautiful area, the Pendle area of Lancashire, where all the witches come from, and loads of sorcery. I've done a few treasure trails around there with my little one. There's a lake called Pendle View. Many years ago, some previous owners purchased some large fish from abroad. I believe they went in the 30s, and they were certainly, they'd not been in long when I did the British Carp Championships on there, good 10, 11 years ago. They definitely hadn't been in there long at the time, and they were mid-30s then, so they were 36, I think. So I'm pretty sure they went in at £30. They went very big. Butthead, was it? And
yeah,
Beavis.
Butthead the big common. Did it make 50?
It was very close to 50. If it didn't make 50, it was certainly 48, 49. Anyway, for some reason, that lake's changed hands a number of times. It's one of them businesses that have never really sustained itself. It's, I believe, the owners have sold it again, and they've sold the three biggest fish. Another fishery, as I've seen on the net this week, have purchased those fish. Three extremely large fish, I think. They were... I don't know how big the mirror was.
I don't know how big they were, but I know they've gone in the Girton Syndicate, part of AJS Fisheries. That's it's not too far from here, to be honest. It's one of the Trent Valley pits. And I know
how would you feel fishing for, you know, if you fished that lake for the last year and all of a sudden somebody dropped a 48 in it and a 42 and another 40 and you caught them the week after, as fish tend to get caught very quickly when they get dropped in. Do you think people just don't care and they just want to catch that big fish that now lives in their lake?
Once upon a time, I'd have frowned upon it.
Yeah.
I'm more relaxed nowadays and I just think, how much was a Girton ticket?
Really? Would you go and fish for it?
Damn right I would. Look, yeah. Let's take it back. The Longfield fish were put in Horton. People frowned upon them. Then all the, to quote a term, the great and good of carp fishing went and caught them and paraded them in adverts and magazines.
Did they go in at significantly large weights?
Yeah, Jack, I think, topped 40 in Horton Longfield before it moved.
Really?
I think a couple of them. I think the Parrot was up there as well, if not very close.
Okay, okay.
Horton, very historic water with some cracking fish. Would you have fished there?
To be fair, I looked at the pictures of the fish. You know, the Girton Syndicate have made no secret of this. They paraded the fish all over their website. I've seen it on Facebook, and they look like three cracking fish. I've got to be honest. They look nice. When we're going?
Yeah. Well, when we're packing up.
Yeah. I've got a loose night to do. I've got nothing to do tonight. If I had a bite in the next 5 minutes, I'd probably stay on here, on Cromwell.
If you had a bait boat, you'd be around Swim 11.
Yeah, certainly. Swim 11's the only swim that's done a significant amount of fish this weekend. Well done to Sean, who caught them. More on that next week. But yeah, it's all bait boating to a tree. There's a few fish certainly sat under there because he caught very quickly every time. And yeah, if I had a bait boat on another night, I would be going round there. But yeah, good luck to those fish in that lake.
There's some other cracking fish in Girton as well.
Is it? I don't know anything about the place.
There's a mid-30 ghost common.
Yeah.
You know, a lad I know called Chris Angel caught it. I also had, I think it was around, you know, 29 rings a bell, but it might have been a low 30. It was this long, real black-looking apple slice scales all the way along it fish. It was an absolutely belting fish. I believe there's a couple of nice commons in there already as well.
Yeah. Where exactly is it?
It's...
What county?
Nottinghamshire.
How is it?
Yeah. That's it. As the crow flies, I bet we're less than 20 miles away from it now.
Right.
Don't quote me on that, but I'll show you on Google Earth in a bit.
They'll come out really lovely quick, pits. So maybe we should get on there tonight.
Yeah. Well, they might not, though. It's the sizeable pits.
Are they?
Yeah.
I always think when fish get moved, they do normally come out almost straight away. I remember some fish coming out of a reserve one time, getting dropped in a well-known lake next door, run by a well-known angler, and he caught it within a few hours of it going in there. Claimed it as a fish from a very hard lake. Less of that. God, I wish I could tell all the juicy stories on this carpcast, you know. Got some bangers from over the years. But yeah, so let's probably get libel letters in the post. We can hint. Yeah. We can hint, yeah. Right. What next? I'll tell you what hasn't done any good for me this week, although I've not lost hope in it, is Holmes's talk the other week about liquids. It's all arrived in the post. I got a load of liquids off Nash. I got the DNA beta stim. I got the hydro wheat, which is basically wheat steep liquor. I mashed it all in a bucket, used a bit of ground bait to bind it, and some slicker hemp, some like chili hemp. And I've been feeding it on my spots all weekend for 2 days, and I've caught nothing. But the whole lake's caught nothing apart from two pegs. So I'm fishing this week. I'm going to continue using it. But you can get that stuff. So don't let my blank put you off. But if you would like any of those liquids and other stuff, you can get it from dnabaits.com. And you can get a discount, can't you, Mark?
Yes, use the code CARPCAST5 in the checkout. You'll get 5% off any order from them.
As I did, I had my Hydro Wheat and Beta Stim turn up. I got a load of other liquids as well. And the speedy service, I got an email and a text off them when it was getting delivered. I was really, really impressed with the service. And you can too. You can buy all of their boilie deals. They do a load of post-free deals where you get... what do you get with it, Mark?
You get all sorts of stuff.
You get stick mix, like that matches the boilie. You get 3 kilos of that. Or you can have pellets instead of the stick mix. You get a tub of pop-ups that match the bait or wafters. And you get a boilie dip as well. And... they're post-free to your door. The 5-kilo deal is $59.99. The 10-kilo deal is $94.99. 20 keys is $149.99. And they do a bigger one as well. And you can get that post-free and an extra discount using the code CARPCAST5. Do have a look at the range of liquids. I was blown away. I mean, we never used to advertise the liquids during this feature. And when I had a look because of the Mark Holmes talk on CARPCAST 38... it blew me away, all the different stuff that they do, the corn steep liquors, the oily hemps, obviously the beta stim that I got is a good one. Have you had a look at any on there?
I have, yes. In fact, while you were walking around the lake earlier, and I was having a look in your bucket at yours, and
yeah.
Also, Matt, the cameraman who's been with us this weekend, he's a DNA lad. When he gets home, he might have found his lost a bit of switch paste.
Have you nicked some?
It accidentally fell in my boot. But another thing they do that's an edge. One thing I want to use down Bluebell. I mean, those fish are big. They've got big gobs.
Yeah.
One of the plans is there, just get like an 80 mil pop-up, but wrap it with a ball of paste, make it literally at 40, 50 mil.
Yeah.
Just have it, it's something different out there, and paste leaks attraction forever.
They do some really original stuff, like the cured hook baits, like salt-cured hook baits that, again, Holmesy has kind of championed for quite some time. They do some great stuff. So if you ever have a look on the website, dnabaits.com. And every week we're going to have a tip from one of their consultants. They've got England internationals, fantastic anglers, and we're going to get a baiting tip off one of them every single week. It would have been this week, but we've been away on the bank doing the CARPCAST social, so I'm afraid you have to wait till next week for that. But we've, as I said, we've got England internationals lined up, and there's going to be a bait tip every single week. The switch is their newest bait out. Mark's nicked a load of paste for that, so he's going to be using that, but I know there's a load of people catching on that now. A friend of mine's been using the Secret 7, which is a blend of more than 7 spices now, I believe. Yeah, Jason said
Matt's had some of that, but he hid it.
Yeah, it's really nice smelling bait, that one. Do the SLK, the Ocean X, the Nutty One, the Nutter S. Again, all those post-free deals come with stick mix or pellet, bait dip, and pop-ups or wafters. Go to the website, dnabaits.com. Check out all the decent stuff they have on there. We can't recommend it highly enough. And don't forget to use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out, and you can get an extra 5% discount. All stuff sent to your door.
Trunks.
Are we going to do a Top Trumps this week?
Yeah, let's do it. We've had one queued up for a couple of episodes now. Let's do it. Two day ticket gaffs we're both familiar with. You're familiar one, I'm familiar with the other.
Yeah, I've fished them both. I've never caught a fish out of one of them.
I've never fished the other. And okay. The other one, just down the road from here, the A1 Pits, it always seems to be kind to me.
Well, you best take the Yorkshire Pits. One.
It's in Nottinghamshire.
Well, it's close to Yorkshire, because we can have a War of the Roses, because the other one is Wyeside Lakes in Lancashire. So which Wyre Lake are you picking? The main lake, Wyre itself? There's a number of lakes on that
Yeah. Same complex. With the pit, should we just go for the complex?
Okay, we'll do the whole complex as a whole, yeah. Okay. War of the Roses, stroke Nottinghamshire. Right, so what's the biggest fish in the pits these days?
These days, pits 5 and 6 have got fish to just under 40. Both have done fish just over 40 in the past, though.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, it's similar to Top Trumps. We have 5 categories, and we mark out of 10 for each of those categories. The 5 categories are the lake record, or complex record, as this one's going to be, the overall stock of the complex, the difficulty, what amenities that there are at the venue, and then the price per 24 hours. We'll score these out of 10, we'll top them up at the end, and we'll come up with a winner. Currently Mark's losing the overall scores on the doors. I think it's like 3-1, isn't it?
By your count.
I've only got 3 fingers. No. Well, I can't lose. If we count on my 5 fingers and I'm up to 3 on mine, then you can only draw.
I'm keeping score of this one, so I'll apologise now for any fixes.
Okay, so 5 categories. Late record of the complex. You said it's done fish to over 40, but current late record, under 40.
Current biggest in the lake, just under. But after the winter we've just had, the amount of good weights coming out of your country, it wouldn't surprise me if they're over there.
It wouldn't surprise me, but we don't score on what would surprise us. We score on facts.
Tell us about Wyre.
Yeah, Wyre. Well, previously used to hold the Lancashire record, a fish called Hoover that Roger Bacon caught many years ago. It's done 3 different 40s since. The Gladiators, I think 2 of them have made over 40 pounds. And Paw Print, which is still the jewel in Lancashire's crown at the minute. It's a cracking carp.
Is that still going?
Paw Print's still in there, yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah, it is. I'm sure it is. Which has made 40 as well. There are at least 15 to 20 decent 30s in Wyre Lake alone. There's a handful of 30s in Bantams. I think the Bantams record was 39. Fish called Two Bleeps that's gone now. But there's certainly a number of 30 pounders in there. And every fish is kind of good 20 plus. You know, the average size is pretty decent. But as far as late record goes, it's going to be close. But I think Wyre is going to have to be
seven,
yep, and A1 a 6.
Nah, I think the pits is a 7 as well.
Because
I said so.
The pits don't have a 40, and I think Wyre's got 2, maybe 3.
Alright, whatever. 6.5.
Yeah, 6.
Right, next, what we got? The overall stock?
Overall stock, yeah. Well, I've fished probably 10 nights now on the A1 pits. I've not caught a carp yet, so I'd vote 0.
That says nothing about the stock. It says something about your ability to catch the stock.
Go on. What would you describe the stock as? Is it well stocked?
It is well stocked, yes.
Pits really?
5 and 6 can be tricky. They are large and pressured, but fish them well. The best way I've found is being mobile. You know, look for the showing fish. They think they're dolphins at times.
Yeah, I've seen plenty shown in there. Never caught.
Yeah, I've had, when I've caught one, I've usually caught more as well. Yeah, I've had 3 in the morning out of there. You know, I've caught other big beds in 6. You know, I've done tuitions on 3. Actually, with Sean, who's been with us this weekend, he had 4 in a day on 3. Have you blanked on 3?
I did one night on there and somebody nicked our peg. But we left buckets in the swim to move round there, and we came back and the buckets were in the back of someone's car and they were set up in our swim. So yeah, it's I am determined to catch a fish out of there at some point. I mean, it's very close to where we are now. Could always do tonight on there, I guess.
You've got a camper van. All you need is a generator and you'll fit in.
So anyway, overall stock, what are you going to give it? How many 30s are in there?
30s? Well, there's 30s in every lake bar, lake one.
Right. So what are you going to give
complex,
it for stock?
I'm allowed to say. But I'm going to give it... for stock, I'm going to give it a 7 again.
Okay. Well, wire side is well stocked.
I would give it an 8, but with the floods the other year, it kind of shuffled the pack.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll give it a 7. There's still good fish to be had.
Wire side, I mean, Bantams is well stocked. Got a good head of 20s with a number of 30s in. Wire has got 15 to 20 30s for sure, and two, maybe three 40s. Lots and lots of 20s. Then you've got Sunnyside 1 and 2, which are well stocked 20s waters with fish to £30. Got the River Lake that did a 30 last week, I noticed, which is a nice small lake by the side of the track. It's a definite 8. There you go. You're not doing too well there. And you're going to really struggle on the next one. Difficulty.
Difficulty.
The A1 is difficult. Because I've never caught a fish out of anywhere.
That does not mean a lake's difficult, because you can't catch from it. Lake 1 is an absolute runs water full of fish. That is easy.
Even now they've all moved around?
Yeah, even now. You know, it's still fish. There's a mate of mine, Phil Cookie. He goes down there regular. It's his winter water. You know, he's never blanking down there.
Okay.
You know, pit 2's a lot of fish. Pit 3's a lot of fish and bigger. You know, pit 4's a little bit trickier. That's the deep one, down to nearly 20 foot in places.
Yeah.
And pit 5 and 6, still good stocks.
Tricky.
Tricky because they're busy. But they always, I rarely blank on there. They're kind to me.
Okay. 6.
So, what are we on difficulty? I'm going to give it an 8. Because we've got runs water through the tricky.
So, no, it can't be an 8. An 8 is like you're going to catch almost every time you go.
Yeah. If you blank, you get on pit 1, you catch one in the last hour.
I'm not sure you can give A1 pits an 8 for difficulty.
I'm getting stitched up here again.
I just think you I mean, to be fair, I've had a few blanks on wire, which is the trickiest of the lot because it's the big fish water. I've never blanked on foxes. I've only fished bantams once. I would say it's, you know, it's not a beginner's water, but it's also not, you know, it's on the moderate side. It's on the easy side of moderate, I would say. You know, the complex as a whole, if you add all the lakes together. But I would say you're going to expect to catch. If you get on Sunnyside 1, 2, Bantams, River Lake, you're going to catch most times that you go. Even me. So, I'd be giving A1 pits a 6 and wire side a 7.
You reckon?
Well, of course I reckon. I'm winning every category. It's going to be a clean sweep. Okay. I'm definitely winning this one.
What have you given yourself for the year? Or should I say, what have I given you?
Let's go 7.5 and 7. I can't make it look too embarrassing for you this one, because I know this next one here, amenities. Tell us about the amenities on A1 pits, please.
There's a toilet, which... Well, I think the least said about it, the better. No, it's not that bad. Last time I went there, the doors actually shut on the cubicle.
Okay.
And the toilet's flushed. So, I thought there was a fish over there. It's just a grebe that's come up.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to save yourself embarrassment and give yourself a 4?
Well, last time I went, the toilet flushed, so it's got to be a 4 and out of 5. There's a lock gate as well, it's safe.
There's a lock gate at night, and there's a track around, so you can park by the swims, as Gary Bay said to us one day. Put a track round the lake and you don't need fish, because people will just park up, and there is never not half a dozen caravans parked up on the A1 pits at any time of day or night. And it has a toilet, which I'm guessing is some sort of legal requirement. The wire side has got everything. There's a decent sized tackle shop, There's bar, restaurant, they have functions there, singers, bands at the weekends. They have little festivals in the summer.
Is that for the lakes or something else?
No, it's for the anglers, and there's a campsite there as well. You know, there's electric hookups for your caravans. You can have food delivered to your peg. You get a form when you buy your day ticket, and they you can order your food for the entire week, and they will deliver it on a quad bike to your peg. You can get quad bike delivery to your peg of your tackle for moving around. There's disabled swims. It's got everything you could ever need in a day ticket venue. It has to be a 9 for facilities, bordering on 10.
I'm actually adding these up as we go along to save any confusion.
Well, my side's got fantastic facilities. I mean, you know, it's got an actual pub. You know, it looks like a pub. It's got Sky TV in there. It's very social in the evenings. You know, in the summer holidays and stuff, there's a lot of people camping. There's an electronic gate to go in. Nobody gets in or out without signing in. And yeah, it's got facilities. I mean, it's got to be a 9, borderline 10, to be honest.
Well, I think we should do a reverse facilities in this one.
I think you wish you were.
Go on. It's a wild water. It's more like proper fishing without everything laid on for you.
Well, we're doing amenities, so anyway, moving on. Not this dragging on forever. Price. This is a category that's going to stop your clean sweep, I think.
A1 pits, £15 for 24 hours fishing, which is good value for fish to almost £40. Choice of lakes, choice of difficulties, choice of size, and some bloody good commons to go at.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's extremely fairly priced. It doesn't have the facilities of some other day ticket venues, but one of the major examples is, you know, you do 3 nights on there, it's going to cost you significantly less than 3 nights on most other day ticket lakes. And for the fish in there, if you can look past the facilities for the fish in there, it's great value, I think. So I think you can have an 8 for that.
Yeah, I think we should have an 18. Because it's so good.
Wyaside is £25 for 24 hours on
that's
all lakes.
That's expensive, that's a 1.
It's pretty standard day ticket prices, virtually £1 an hour, which is, you know, for any decent lake, that seems to be what it is. I think it's good value for the majority of lakes that are on there. It's got a bit of everything to suit all angler levels. So, I mean, Wyaside, it's a pretty standard day ticket price, isn't it? What, a 7?
Yeah, there's got to be a bit of a bigger gap than that between £15 for 24 hours at an 8. And almost double that.
Well, you can have a 9 then.
I'll have a nine.
You can have a 9 and Wyaside's a 7, which is a pretty medium price for a decent day ticket. So, without adding up, it's pretty clear that this week's top Trump's winner is Lancashire Wyaside Complex. Which, if you haven't checked it out, it's a great... I learned a hell of a lot of fishing on that Wyre Lake. I was on the syndicate many years ago. And the complex has come on leaps and bounds since then.
Do you actually want the scores?
Go on.
Well, you're not having them.
Okay.
Now, you've got 38. A1 pitch, 34.
How many?
30.
Okay. This week's top trump is Northwest Lake Wyaside.
But the A1 pitch would win if you had a fight.
Let's get Ali Hamidi in, because this week has seen the start of the second series of the Big Fish Off, so we thought we'd get Ali in to talk about that and other stuff.
So I'd like to welcome Mr. Ali Hamidi to the Carpcast. It's been a while since we spoke. How are you doing, pal?
Only feels like yesterday, Jamie. Yeah, I'm good, doing good, mate, thanks.
Yeah, it's probably March, isn't it, the Northern Show, which you've supported from the off, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, mate. Yeah, it was a great show, wasn't it, this year as well? Absolute blinder. I'd say that and the big one down in Farnborough were the best two that I visited, without a doubt.
Yeah, big one always gets the numbers, doesn't it? But we're hot on their tails. We had 10,000 this year. Some people believe...
Well, geography, innit?
Yeah.
I actually met loads of the guys that went to the northern one that came to the big one as well. So,
Right.
You always get the keenies at both, don't you?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But yeah, obviously I'm biased, you know, we're the best, but, you know, we aspire to be the big one. You know, props to them. They do it well.
Sure, you'll get there, mate.
Yeah, we're hot on the heels. You know, 3 years ago they had 12,000. We've hit 10,000 this year. And, you know, obviously that's considering they had a 10-year head start on us. We're catching. Well, less of that and more of you. New series of the Big Fish Off starting this week. Who have we got? I keep seeing pictures of Bobby Davrow, is it?
Yeah, Bobby, yeah. So tomorrow night, Thursday the 7th of April at 8 p.m. on ITV4. And the first show kicks off with an absolute belter, to be fair. We've got Bobby Davrow, who I don't think needs any introduction, really, from the world of British television and comedy. And Ricky Groves, whose name probably needs a bit of an introduction, but his actual character doesn't. He's Gary from EastEnders. So the link between the two is when Bobby was on EastEnders for a little while, they obviously worked together. Gary was the mechanic, and I think he worked with Minty or whatever. I don't really watch EastEnders.
but
they're both anglers, so along with obviously there's a few anglers that work on EastEnders along with Scott and that, so good. They were good friends, so it was good to get them both on board. And the series just kicks on to another level, and to kick off with Bobby, he's so funny, mate. He's one funny guy, from start to finish. So yeah, good, great entertainment, I think. I am biased, but even putting my non-biased hat on, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better show on the box that night.
Where did you film that one?
We did that all at the old Berry Hill complex. So it's quite a if anyone, you know, people who don't know that, it's a very, very traditional old estate lake. But also they've got a couple of other belting venues on the same site. We carry on the series, as you know or may not remember, last year finished with that very sort of controversial Crucian Challenge.
Yeah.
And then this series, ironically, kicks off the Crucian Challenge. So we do that on, I think it's Milton Lake on their complex, and then the last two challenges are on the old lake. And the middle challenge, we go out in the old punts, which I remember watching John Wilson when I was a kid go out in the punts float fishing on there. So it was really nice to do a show almost in the footsteps of someone that I looked up to growing up watching telly. And then the last challenge, we actually go from old technology to modern technology, and we actually use bait boats, Jamie.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite funny watching them, two celebrities trying to control a bait boat they've never used before. That's funny in itself.
did you get some road trips abroad for this series as well?
Yeah, we've got the finale. Actually, you know, when we were planning series two, ITV said they'd love the Britishness of it. They liked us going to, you know, regions of the UK and lakes that we go to and getting that across. But I did say to them that we could run out of places to go quite quickly. And I did say that a finale abroad should be a signature of the series. So we go to Thailand this series. We go to Gillam's.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of a sure thing, if you like, for big fish. So we know we're going to get good fish action. And then it's down to us as characters to make good telly.
And who've we got?
Well, that one, funnily enough, when you go away for that sort of period, it's important when you're going on a proper fishing trip to take people that you know are going to appreciate it.
Yeah.
So I know some anglers are always funny about when we have reality stars, but the first one's Ricky Raymond. He loves fishing. He's a real keen angler. He's not very experienced, but he loves fishing. He goes fishing. And Mitchell Smith, who is a boxer who was funnily enough, he was unbeaten when we went filming. He's just lost his first ever fight, but he's one of the hottest prospects in British boxing, really, as a featherweight. So yeah, the two of them went out, and they were a good bunch of lads, to be fair to them. But that's a very dramatic show, a great finale to the series. It ends with a real bang.
Good. It's such a beautiful place, Gillam's as well, and there's some weird and wonderful fish in there, isn't there?
Yeah. I always say it's a bit of a freak show, but it is run and managed incredibly well by Stuart Gillam. I mean, there's no right for those fish to even exist in somewhere like that without, you know, bad things happening to him, but he's such a great fishery manager, if you like, or owner, that, you know, the water quality there is impeccable. They're fed with great food. The place is managed. And they've got monster-sized fish growing and growing, which is proof that the water is top-notch. You know, he's got people there, mate, that test the water, like, in every corner of the lake pretty much all day long. You know, and
really?
They're tinkering with it. Yeah, it's like almost like a... They almost runs it like a giant marine tank is all I can liken it to. You know, it's really, really fabulous to see something. Because for the biomass, the stock of fish that are in there... There's no real reason how they could survive as well as they have and to flourish like they have. I mean, it's not speaking out of turn. It is, like I say, I always think it is like a freak show. So crazy.
We're pretty confident, contrary to opinions I've heard this year. Obviously, your TV series of Flying, this is on terrestrial TV. Rob Hughes has signed his deal as well for a load of angling programs. Yeah. Fishing on TV.
Yeah, well done, Rob.
Fishing on TV is certainly not dead, is it? Contrary to
popular
belief.
No. I mean, it's not really popular belief, mate. We all know who you're talking about. I think some people might feel like they're not having a great run of it or something, but from you know, our angle, we don't really look at what other people are doing. We just keep our head down and try to come up with good concepts for TV networks, and if the content's correct, they'll have it. One of the things people get, you know, might get sidetracked by, they don't want the old traditional fishing shows. You know, ITV are not going to put on, like, I'll use us as an example here. They're not going to play Thinking Tackle as it was on Sky and Discovery, right? That's not going to happen. They need a show that can appeal to the angler, of course, first and foremost, and also a non-angler. So we have to make shows that appeal to both people. And you know, with all due respect, I don't think people are ever going to switch off from the big fish off. There might be a laugh here and there, but I don't think they're going to go, oh, I'm not watching that. Because, you know, it's fun. We're having a laugh. You can't, there's nothing you can begrudge on it, really. Might be a little bit of shouting and laughing about from time to time, but, you know, who doesn't shout when a big fish goes in the net, you know?
No, it's great to see the enthusiasm, isn't it? I mean, not the people that were knocking it are probably looking for reasons to knock things anyway, because, you know, that's just, you're never going to change those people's mind that want to look for the negatives in things. You know, that you've got to disregard them and look at it. It's a great concept, and you know, it's good to have any sort of fishing media on TV. It's, you know, it's,
yeah,
it is being made cooler, the sport.
I mean, do you know what, like, I always say, whenever you, if you do a survey to, like, people, say, like, our age group, me and you, Jamie, and backwards, right, or and another generation, you say to them, like, what's your favourite fishing show, pretty much, I would say most of them would have said Passion for Angling, right, and I said this on Carp Talk in an interview the other day. I went, Passion for Angling was brilliant, I loved it, I actually couldn't wait for it to come on BBC Two every Sunday when it was on at 6 o'clock. I used to sit there. It ran for a few weeks, right, and it never got another series. I know Hugh Miles had to film it and everything else and all that, but, you know, BBC had, like, audience figures scorching through the roof. They would have gone to Hugh Miles and said, we are paying you, you're going to go and make another series. But that's the problem. That type of show that sort of appeals to the hardcore spirit of angling doesn't necessarily grip the imagination of bigger viewing figures, and That's what makes the pounds go around for the TV networks. You know, they need to sell advertising and, you know, TV licenses and everything else. And so audience figures are king, mate.
Yeah, it's been an issue since I was a kid. I mean, there was a few, like, fishing was no... I mean, there's probably as many people went fishing when I was a kid as what they do now. Maybe a few less, but it was still one of the biggest participant sports in the UK. But it never transferred to TV. It was all the programmes that were on TV failed. You know, they did one series and gone, because it's very hard to make it entertaining, you've found a way to do that with the big fish off. I mean, you've had just the stuff on Sky for many years, and obviously that has worked, but, you know, that's a 100% fishing audience. You know, you're not really expecting non-anglers to be watching the Thinking Tackles and, you know, those sorts of programs. But to transfer that to a more, you know, front room friendly, you know, evening show, I think you've done it. I really do. Or as close as you can get to a concept that, yeah, you know, you can watch where your missus sat next to you and not go and get this off now, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, people she recognises and, you know.
Yeah, I test it on my missus. I always get her to, like, when I'm watching. Like, she watched this first show coming on and she was wetting herself in a humorous way. yeah, she found it. Yeah, she thought it was really, really funny. She likes that sort of Lee Evans, Bobby Dabro type of humour sometimes. I mean, I like drier, dirtier wit at times, but it's each their own. But yeah, the thing is as well, it's getting the trust of the commissioners in these at these TV networks to believe in what you're doing. And you've got to give them something good that works and gets the audience figures. And once you've done that, you've got their trust and you've got to keep doing it, you know. That's I think the thing people don't seem to grasp out there, either when they're coming forward with criticism about this project or other projects, or when they're just sort of shooting from the hip, talking about how their feelings are towards things, you know? They're not thinking, really.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. So what else have you got this year? You were out filming in some weird and wonderful places last year, I saw. There was a place in Japan, was it?
So we've got Monster Carp as well. So hot off the back of the Big Fish Off success, we were planning on Thinking Tackle's 10th year. So I said to Dan, I said, look, why don't we just put a 10th year, let's go and do a load of sessions on, like, wacky places abroad. I know some of the UK anglers won't like it. They'll go, oh, why don't you do it on our places? But thing is, we do all of our features, all of our web videos, you know, loads of things we're always doing domestically. So why not let's, you know, I love Tony Davies Patrick's articles when I was growing up in Carp World. I used to love seeing him fishing all these different places. So there's a bit of that in me. And because the Big Fish Off did so well, I thought, you know what, this has got legs for a mainstream show. Obviously you'd have to get the culture element. You'd have to get this sort of Top Gear guys traveling abroad, bit of adventure, getting into a bit of, you know, Miver and everything else like that. And so Monster Carp was born, really. We filmed the first one in Hungary pretty much this time last year, to be honest. No, actually, it was the end of April. We filmed it last year. And that was, if you like, a pilot. And we edited it, presented it to ITV, and, you know, thank the Lord, mate, they liked it. And we then did one in Austria, we did a show in Japan, and one in Italy as well, on the River Po, a couple of places. So it's very different to Thinking Tackle, mate. It's not all, you know, here's me rig and spod mix and stick mix and, you know, this is where I put me bivvy. It's a lot more story based, and it's got a narrative to it. It's as much about the humans as it is about the fish we catch. So hopefully, you know, it'll engage viewers for a few years.
When are we going to see that out?
So that's going to be July time. We could have got it a little bit earlier, but then you're going up against the Euros, and ITV wouldn't have had the slots for it as well. You know, you want to get a good slot for your first series. So July, in between the Euros finishing and the Olympics starting, I think is when we're looking at being televised for that.
There's loads on TV for us anglers this year, it seems. I mean, I love the fact that the media's moving forward. You know, we've done something new with the podcast, and that's gone down really well. I think we topped 34,000 downloads in March.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is incredible. You know, you'll know, being in the media, you'll know how significant those figures are. We've kind of surpassed like previous forms of media. You know,
More than magazines by a mile now, mate, isn't it? That really, you're talking sort of the figures of Angler's Mail and Angling Times, really. That's the only other competition with numbers wise. And obviously, you guys, people probably listen to the whole thing in one sitting, some of them, don't they? When they're fishing,
right.
which is lovely.
Yeah, fishing and driving, it seems to be good for anything that where you need to past time. You know, it's spoken word podcast. They do, because you don't have to focus on it, but it disengages your brain from anything else. So you got a 3-hour drive and you bang a, you know, any spoken word podcast on, the journey flies. So it's great. And we've hardly scratched the surface yet. Yeah, with people.
So. We're all getting old, Jamie. You see, I remember a time when I just used to have music on, and now when you put my car or van on or whatever, it's just talk sport.
Yeah.
or it's changed now.
Yeah, you'll be on Radio 4 right. Next.
Oh, yeah. The pan pipe moves.
Yeah, the play for the day. Oh, the Archers, there you go. That's a big fish off Series 4. It's going to be after Cast of the Archers.
Yeah. I've got to give a shout out as well. Big congratulations to Rob and that, because it's sort of, you know, getting that deal with BT. It's great. I mean, thing is with Rob as well, I mean, he is a really, really good presenter, Rob. I think he's, you know, he's very engaging. We always, I mean, me and Dean particularly, we love being interviewed by him. Like when we do the show with you guys, I either prefer you or Rob to do the chin wagging, because it makes our job easy, you know, for talking. And when we did the big one, we didn't have anyone asking us questions. We didn't have a script. We didn't have screens either at the time. So it was quite hard for the two of us to just batter on for an hour or whatever it was. It's much nicer. Yeah, when you've got a good presenter to bounce off, you know.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's good for the sport. I mean, the bigger picture is, you know, I'm involved in some media, you're involved in tons of media, like, but it's good. The more the better. You know, if somebody else came along with another great podcast that had the same figures as ours, brilliant. Because we, you know, the more media that's out there, especially, you know, like modern media, TV programs, you know, YouTube blogs, whatever it is, I think I love technology, I embrace it, and you know, and the more we utilize that to make our life easier, the better it is. And if I can sit there listening to hours and hours of content on the bank instead of, you know, Talk Sport's great, but it's kind of like Groundhog Day, isn't it? Like whatever's in the news.
Yeah, right, the same thing all day. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you get it. But so, like, you know, if I've got 20 hours of audio fishing stuff to listen to, fantastic. You know, give it me. I'll listen to it all weekend.
Yeah, it's good.
But
that's good,
yeah, we've got to embrace it, and it seems like it's all moving in the right direction. So that's great. I mean, what's in store for you this year? I mean, have you got a syndicate? Do you have time to concentrate on proper fishing?
What an outrageous question. No, mate. Honestly, do you know what? I sometimes feel a bit embarrassed because I've said it before. I wrote it in my new book. I've said, like, I've just accepted that, you know, personal fishing is no longer. And when I speak to people at shows, they're like, "You've been out lately," and I was like, "Honestly, I haven't literally
just features.
I haven't been in my fishing bag since the end of October when we finished in Japan, because so exhausted after all that filming. And then don't forget, all in between that, I'm not a fisherman. People, like, when my friends refer to me, like, "Oh, Ali's a professional fisherman," I'm not, you know. I'm a marketing and media man who loves fishing.
You
know,
you can fish when you have to.
I love fishing, but what it is when we finish that filming, someone's got to review that. The Corders marketing side still got to be run and directed and managed. And you know, when you put so much energy into those sessions and those trips, not just when you're there, but the planning of them, mate, you know, like getting, people don't realise, I have to sort out all the logistical side, like all the kit getting to Japan, what we need, how we're going to get from A to B, where we're going on that day to film that scene. And maybe one day I'll have people helping me that understand the television we're making, and we've got more and more staff coming on board that are getting trained and understand what goes into these shoots. But at the moment, mate, it's just me that does that side of the package. And if it fails, it's on me. If it succeeds, it's on everyone, you know. So that's the sort of pressure you're under. So in the end, come November time, all I concentrated on, mate, was getting fit again, training loads and working really hard and spending some time with family and friends, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. What's this new Corder 24 thing then that I've seen everywhere? Tell us the concept behind that.
Yeah, nice of you to ask. Basically, Corder 24 is something that for a long time, I think me and Danny in particular were quite frustrated, because we'd do Thinking Tackle or we'd do stuff and we'd maybe promote a certain way of fishing or give someone loads of good advice, but then walk into a tackle shop and the tackle shop might not have our stuff. So say, for, I'll give you an example, like it might be an IQD rig and an anti-tangle sleeve or something, and they might not have our product. So they then go to a competitor and get theirs, you know, because it you know, for all intents and purposes, it looks the same or whatever. Yeah. And they take it. And I think we've made that person want to use that method. We've inspired them to go and try it or whatever. And then someone else is benefiting from our hard work. That's what we're, you know, when people are like, why don't you reduce your prices, your rip off? I'm like, well, you don't realise all the overheads and time that goes into these things. You know, it's not,
of course, yeah.
You know, just the product being made, the material cost, and then its manufacturing process. There's a big journey before we've got to that. And Quarter 24 is very much a portal, which people have to know the sale goes via the retailer. You know, Dan has said in his very own words, he'll never sell direct to the public. The retailers are the ones who helped him get to where he is today. They've played a part, as well as, you know, his hard work, as you know. And that hasn't been all down to one thing. It's been down to lots of things. And so it's important that they carry on getting the sales. So any retailer with an e-commerce site that wanted to be on this is registered and is coded into the system. So what we will then be doing is on Facebook, on Twitter, we can put up videos that we've been doing for years and years, showing a certain method or just how a certain session went. But there's always something people want from them. And what we get is people coming up to us saying, where can I get this? Where can I get that? And we've never been able to say, well, you can get it just here. And now we're able to, there's a link there. So if they do like that rig or they like that approach, it fires them straight into a dedicated part of Quarter 24 that is specific to that product or approach or setup. And they can either buy all in one hit, say it's a rig, right? They can buy either all the components in one click of a button, as the old house phone going, or they can basically adjust the things in that. So they pick everything, but they want two packs of hooks, you know, one a bigger breaking strain of hook link. They can do all of that sort of stuff. So it's a really efficient way of people getting what they need.
No worries. So how does it actually work then? It connects you with what? Just how do you get pecking order of shops?
So you go on quarter24.com. Yeah. You go to quarter24.com and then, so once you've filled your basket up, right, you've got what you want, like any e-commerce site, towards the back end, you'll then be asked to whether you want to pick and collect, right? Mm. Or you want it delivered. And what by entering the postcode, it will give you your three nearest retailers, okay?
Yeah.
So if you want to stick to your local shop, and they're obviously as long as they're on the scheme, because some shops don't even have a website, so obviously they can't expect to be on this system.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they're on that, they can click that shop. Or some people, for example, might live in Northumbria but like to buy from the Tackle Box, so they can just select the Tackle Box from the drop-down, you know, menu of all the different Tackle Boxes. Just search the name and it'll pop up. So your purchase, so when you've done your transaction, the purchase is basically emailed to a separate system at that tackle shop. They process your order, they get your payment, they do all your after sales and everything else, and they will send your order out pretty much within 24 hours.
How does it work with different retailers selling stuff at different prices? I mean, you're obviously not allowed.
Well,
to price
no, there's
fix.
A price. That's the thing that no. Well, one of the good things with Quarter, mate, is we've always had price pretty stable. You know, we've never been a brand that needs discounting or you know, trying to, I don't know, like put it in the bargain bucket. You know, we've never been one of those brands. We've always had product people want. That's what my job is, really, to ensure that people want us. You know, and we show people why we believe we're the best at what we do. So hopefully that was never an issue. It's more, you know, yeah, there are times that someone might go on eBay and get something cheaper, or they might go to a tackle shop and get it 10p cheaper. But obviously what Quarter 24 is doing is trying to make people whose buying decision may have been harder, easier. So, yeah, they're paying a fixed price and all the tackle shops have to sell at RRP. Yep.
Yeah.
That's dictated by us, which is what they normally sell for. You know, it's just that with this, they're getting the service, they're getting the information, they're getting everything to help them make that easier decision. People have come back to me, they're so excited about it, some customers. They're like, oh my God, this is like the answer to my prayers. I've been, you know, so many times I see things, I get a glimpse of something on telly, or I see something in an article, or I see it on a video, but I can't quite work out exactly what it is. And the fact that you've pushed them to exactly what it is, and they can just click a few buttons and it's theirs, it is helpful. That does... you and I probably take it for granted nowadays, but for people starting fishing, there's so much choice out there. It must be daunting sometimes, you know, trying to get what you need and making sure it's the exact thing and sticking to a budget.
I'm on there now on that site, coda24.com, and I'm looking at the first thing that's come up is your long range setup from Croatia. So there's a picture of the rig. You've got each item of tackle has got like a plus sign by it. So if you want like the hook link sleeves, the anti-tangle things, you just click on that and it takes you. I really like the idea of it. It's great. I think it just takes you to a page. Well, it's not even a page, it's a pop-up box, isn't it? Pick your color, pick your quantity. So then obviously it adds to the basket. I'll add a number of things to the basket, and then when I check out, it'll give them the option of what, three different shops or whatever.
You'll get your three nearest, so yeah, you'll get those shops that are up in your neck of the woods that are on it. And then, yeah, you can either, because people are like, oh, how does this support them? Well, look, if you still want to go into the tackle shop and get all your bits, your bait for the weekend or whatever, we can pick and collect it. So you know your parcel of quarter bits is sat there waiting, or guru items, and then you can go in and get your bag of boilies and your pint of maggots or your pellets or whatever you want. It's all a part of that journey. Or if you haven't got time, you need it sent out, then that's there as well, just like any other e-commerce site. But the other important thing is the sections, you know, the quarter essentials, the guru essentials, hero products as well. People like, well, that's a controversial name. They thought we were saying that we're heroes, and it's not. It's actually, it's the products that we deem are the heroes and have often sort of made us look good in situations or whatever. And, you know, we're calling them, you know, if you like, heroic products. So, yeah, there's a few hero pages there, and they'll get added to now as projects come and go. So these ones you see at the moment are all relevant to the Masterclass DVD that's gone out for free and was launched in February. So the films that are on there are all relevant to that. What we put on Facebook to drive traffic to this will also be relevant to content on there.
I like the idea, and again, you know, it's another way you've used technology to to make things easier, because like say it is daunting. I mean, I do it myself. I'll see I might see somebody's rig in an article or whatever, and I think, oh, you know, I like the shape of that bead, or that, you know, might be the HeliSafe clip or whatever, and you don't always know what it is, do you? You might see it and think, oh yeah, I want that plastic thing that's rounded at the top, and it, you know, straight away there's somewhere to look, there's a button by the exact product, and away you go. I like it. Like I say, this is the sort of thing I think is great, just generally, you know, using technology. Anything else around the corner? Anything else we need to be keeping an eye out for?
We've got some... I mean, one of the other things people love this for is when new products come out, there's been so much interest in the single system that Dan's sort of designed, and we've been manufacturing with Jag. That was originally... We were looking at the Far East, trying to keep price down, but the problem is, you bring something out, but you bring that for the first time, quarter going into, you know, if you like, bank sticks or buzzer bars, and if that thing had a problem, you know, that's messed up our entry into that market from day one. And so working with Jag, who, you know, could be regarded as, you know, the market leader in that type of stuff, they've made all the mistakes, so we don't have to make them. They've done their sort of trial and error with how things go together and bits of stainless come together in the engineering world. And, you know, using Jim at Jag's expertise, that system, the single system, which I think some people have probably seen that crazy green advert on the back of magazines, looks like a cricket wicket and didn't know what it was. Well, yeah, that we're very excited about that. And obviously, again, quarter 24, you know, that'll be on the new product section next month, and they'll be able to sort of pick and choose what they want and how it goes together. It makes everything so easy and seamless for people. They're not second guessing or wandering aimlessly around trying to get an answer. You know, So it helps them, definitely. But yeah, we've got loads of other things bubbling away, mate. It's hard to tell, you know, say all of them now. I'd normally try to wait until it bears fruit before come on on the Carp Cast and have a chat.
And you've got your second book out, The Carper's High. I saw that you released it, what was it, middle of last year, back end of last year?
Yeah, it was actually just after I got back from Japan filming, it came out, and yeah, it's gone really well, thankfully, and the reception's been wonderful, and yeah, there's not too many of them left. I think sort of they'll probably be by next Christmas, they'll all be sold out, and I probably won't do another print run. I'll just be gearing up to writing Masterclass 2, which a lot of people have been asking for, so...
Which should be what, more of an instructional thingy like the first one, is it?
Yeah, well, Carper's High is really instructional, but I don't think the cover sort of does it justice. It's white and it doesn't look... But yeah, there's loads of... I don't really ever write with just a story aisle. Everything I always do is always got an angle, technical angle to it, because I've never had much fishing time. So any time I do is always a bit of pressure and always trying to sort of catch something with tactical guile rather than just... like boring it into the net by being there, so always looking for an angle to get a quicker bite, and the book is representative of that, really.
Cool. And just give the listeners a little bit of something to help them with their angling. You're saying about getting a quicker bite and stuff, what can you give us a tip? I mean, we've been talking a lot about liquids recently, like making attraction in the swim. I mean, you got any little edges that you're doing at the minute?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone needs any reminding of what I've always been massively into my hook baits and attraction, and I try to drum it into everybody I see that if you are limited with time and you're going to a lake for the first time, casting out a bait that matches all your freebies is mathematically idiotic. Yeah, it's total stupidity. I mean, it's like, if you stopped and thought what you were doing, unless they're mowing, you know, tearing up the bottom and you've gone onto the going bait, and yeah, there are lakes where a bait dominates it and they are just going and mowing it down, but I always want something that stands out and they want to eat it, and so the bait becomes my feature and the single in amongst it is the lure. And in any type of fishing, everything I've done from sea fishing to, you know, match fishing, that hook bait is the holy grail. That has got to be right, and if you get that right, you're getting bites, simple as that. And the other thing this time of year as well, I think it was sort of this time last year when we had a chat together as well, and we did talk about zigs, this, you know, waking up now, those little mini zigs early spring through to even, you know, prior to them spawning, when they're scooting around looking for the first and the sort of early fledging naturals that are bursting through with the weed and the photosynthesis and everything else like that is blinding, you know. Get them out there and just casting little light leads around to show in fish and being mobile can be really, you know, this time of year, I don't think you need loads and loads of bait. They're going around looking, you know, you're not holding them for long periods. They're sort of coming to you. You think you're holding them, but they've probably done 15 laps of the lake by the time they've got back to you.
So I'm someone that's just about to start messing about with liquids this year. I've got a big supply here, various different stuff I've got from different companies. I want to basically introduce liquids into me, like spod mix, something that I can spod regular, little and often type thing, just to keep a cloud in the water column. I've never really used goo, and I've got six of them here. Have you done much with just mixing it into a spod mix? What kind of effect do you get off it?
Well, you've got... See, this is where you have to understand the science of that product, which I sort of engrossed myself in it for about 4 or 5 years now. You've got to think of a tiered system. So if you take some of the more pungent ones, like the Almond Supreme, the squids, the crab, that are very, very, you know, got a really powerful, almost acidic tone to them, yeah? Now, if you started lording that into your spot mix and putting that out, and then you put a very subtle hook bait in amongst it, that's not going to stand out. You've now made your loose feed far more powerful than your single hook bait.
Yeah.
You've got to flip it on its head. The ones that I use that are great, just glazing onto boilies, are things like the corn, The Tiger Nut is absolutely sublime. Just a little drizzle, like almost like olive oil on your salad. Put that in, over your baits. That if you just taste it, honestly, Jamie, if you just taste them yourself, you can tell which ones are made for your loose feed and which ones are made for your up baits, because just by your own knowledge over the years, you know, if it's burning your tongue, well, you don't want to then put a really subtle hook bait out and have your loose feed firing off, you know, like a cruise missile. For me, I've used a lot of Pineapple Supreme. I've spotted over Ziggs with a lot. It's very sweet. It's probably the most expensive, most sophisticated sweetener that's ever existed in angling. It blows things like beetle in it. It's like comparing a Rolls Royce Wraith with a push bike, mate. That's the difference in quality of sweetener in those products, really.
The colouring of them, I mean, if you mix it, like, what kind of a cloud is it going to give you? What sort of volume of a goo bottle am I putting into, like, a bucket of bait?
What are you trying to do? Is this for spotting on the bottom or onto...
But leaving, like, a column of a liquid attractor top to bottom, yeah.
Yeah, well, what I would do, if I was spotting it out to create a bit of a cloud, I'd have a little bit... Say the Tiger Nut was glazed on, but the Tiger Nut's not got a lot of colour. It's actually a creamy brown colour almost. But what I've often done is, if I'm spomming it out, so I'll have the bait in the spom, and just before spomming out, if you watch any DVD, you'll see about 15 bottles by my spod bucket. What I do is just give a little squeeze, onto the spom, just inside the spom, before I shut it, give it a shake, cast out, and that way you put it on superficially, so some will get to the bottom and some will vapor through it. But you want the Tiger Nut, the Pineapple Supreme, the corn, they're very soft, subtle ones. And then on your hook bait, you want to use the Supremes, the powerful Supremes, to suck into it, you know. That's it. Some of the ones that are very dead, like the South Africans used on their spod mix, that, you know, the fish start mowing the bottom up for it, like the raspberry. But they water that down. That raspberry is really, really thick. It's almost like congealed. What they do is they squeeze it into the bottom of a bucket, a little bit of water. That's phenomenal on your mixers. If you can't get fish feeding on the top, you soak that. You just glaze them in a bit of watery raspberry plume. Put that out and watch what happens on the surface. It's embarrassing. I've never seen anything like it, mate. Honestly, I've used every liquid under the sun since I was a kid. I put that, James Armstrong didn't believe me, works for CC Moore now, that even on his mum's, you know, on any of our parents' lives, we would go, remember that day? You couldn't get him going, it was a real hot day on the top, nothing was feeding on Hunter's Corner. You know, when they're just there, static, and not moving, and we were putting normal mixers at and nothing. I went, look, try this. My mates tried it, he said it's that within a minute, the top was like foam. It was almost surreal. That's how crazy it can be. And it's, I'm not even biased when I say this. Yeah, I've promoted this product into the UK and helped Kiana Carp, but I've been around long enough, mate. There is nothing, absolutely not a single liquid on this earth in existence that matches what those South Africans have come up with, mate. They've made something that's beyond, you know, current comprehension, you know. All the other things I've used and pissed around with for years, you know, they're just, you know, fish proteins and this and that. They never really made a difference on a single look bait like these have.
I will let you know this year. I've got half a dozen different goos. I've got the pineapple ones. I've got a couple of bags of three. I'm going to be experimenting this year with
Did Kiana send you some out then? Did they? Or
I think we got them from you guys for the angling show. Actually, I think you must have given us some products for Summit or
Robert. Well, I'll sort out a couple. What I'll do is I'll organise some that I think will be suited for the types of things you're going to do. Because I know you like fishing your snowmans and your higher tracks, don't you? Amongst bait, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you don't want to. So, I think I know what you'll need. So I'll send some little description, really, that'll hopefully save you pissing around for a while.
Yeah, if you're a star, I will let you know the results, because we had Mark Holmes on the week before last, and he's been talking about, you know, dropping 5 litre bottles in the swim, holes drilled in them, you know, on a bit of rope, dropping them in with these
like
liquids.
Yeah, exactly. It's not that stupid, though, what you're saying. It's only what people do in other types of fishing out at sea, you know.
You wouldn't get
a fisherman going out to sea in Florida and not putting a chum bag off the end of his boat. But in England, we go out fishing all the time for pike and stuff and not have anything hanging off the end, you know. Same with carp. I mean, we did something like that in Hungary, really. I was talking about making a nursery around my marker, like around the permanent marker that was out there around the pole, getting the little fish coming to that as a nursery, and then, you know, hopefully picking off bigger specimens off the back edge, you know.
Yeah, it's I think it's maybe something to be able to put that much attraction into your swim and not have any food there, you know, just have like you say, some higher track baits or something without it being absolutely full of bait that's going
to
fill them up.
Them to eat.
I really like the idea of it, and I'm not sure about casting 5 litre bottles out and stuff.
Well, I don't actually cast it out, but if you could get to like a snag tree or something that you're fishing and lowered something in, it's the principle of it is correct. The thing is, in this country, I think we give carp way too much credit. We've built them up to be these supremely intelligent specimens, and they're not. They're stupid. You know, carp are stupid, I think. You know, the only thing that makes them tough is, you know, when there's less of them and lack of competition for food, you know. Minute you put a bit of competition into the environment, they're easy, aren't they? They're one of the easiest fish to catch on planet Earth.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think angling pressure as well. You know, if you're fishing busier lakes, I'm looking to do a bit on Bluebell this year, and you are against the other anglers, against fish that are fished for constantly.
It's line there, though, isn't it? I think it's more the line of anglers there that causes the problem. I think they're acutely aware of that alien object that's built up with water debris on it. It's why some of my mates who message me, they get all caught up with, what colour line should I use? And I'm like, mate, that's the least of your worries at the moment. Like, the least of your worries is what colour mainline you've got on, right? Just go out there, look for some carp. Because I said, within half an hour, your line's white anyway. Because when you get that build-up of debris, and it's hard sometimes trying to explain that to some people.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm glad I've got a little bit of theory out of you as well.
It's nice to start chatting again, get me in the zone.
Yeah, it might even make you want to go fishing, you never know.
I do really want to go fishing again, actually. The break does you really good, great favours, to be honest. So
I had a couple of quiet years, and just speaking to people on the podcast week in, week out, it the buzz is back bigger than ever now, and it comes and goes, you know. I've been fishing 35 years, carp fishing 35 years, and you know, I've had two year breaks two or three times during that period, and it's always back as passionate as it was, you know, when you first got into it, every time. So I'm having a passionate year this year, and you know, putting some effort in catching some fish. So I'm sure as your life changes, I mean, at the minute it's go, go, go at work, I guess. And
yeah,
you know,
plenty of fishing. I'll end up doing probably 14, 15 weeks of angling this year with various projects, big fish off, monster carp, you know, back and forth. So I get my angling fix. And as long as I'm improving and getting better as an angler, I'm happy, you know. But personal targets and going after this fish or that, it's not possible anymore, you know. I've just got to be realistic and, you know that my fishing involves cameras being there and doing it for another purpose, you know, to inspire others and become, hopefully, you know, be a half-decent ambassador for fishing, really, and promote the sport to other people. That's I'm quite proud to do that.
Cool. Well, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. We'll try not
and
to
you,
leave
mate.
It... Try not to leave it a year to the next time, but
anytime.
No worries.
Yeah, good luck to everyone out there as well, mate. So all the listeners and that. I hope you have a fantastic spring and catch the fishy dreams or whatever you're aspiring to do. thanks for, hopefully I've not bored anyone and made them crash.
No, it's been a decent one, I think. So yeah, thank you for joining the Carpcast.
Thanks, mate.
A big thank you to Ali, top guy. As usual, I love it when he lets his hair down, just starts chatting, and he gets out of his business mode. Because there's no doubt he's one of the finest marketing minds. Love it or hate it, Cord has done a fantastic job of marketing over the years, and a lot of it's down to him. So what next? I'll tell you what. You'll be seeing a weekly feature in Carp Talk from us. You can get Carp Talk every Tuesday. You can get it from your local stockist, but on a Saturday is the Carp Talk Extra, which is basically an online version, exactly the same as the printed magazine, and it's just a digital version of it. You can have it to your phone, to your app, to your iPad, your laptop. Just digital, and it's cheaper. It's only £1.49. You can get it from pocketmags.com, and you will see in future a little piece from us, Carpcast Corner. It's only a short piece every week in the news section from myself or Mark. We're going to alternate it, so check out that for a little bit of extra of our ramblings. But what's in this week's edition, Mark?
Should we start with the weekly welly whackers?
The weekly welly whacker, yeah. Talking of welly whackers, by the way, it'll probably be in next week's Carp Talk because he only caught it yesterday. But guess what? Our friend Mr. Ian Stott caught his 650 in six consecutive months from welly. So that'll be next week's weekly welly whacker, I'm sure. But yeah, he had a 52, was it, yesterday?
Yeah, 52 mirror I've seen on his Facebook. But go about this catch. Dave Gaskin is on the front cover with two £50-plus commons from welly. Caught on consecutive days.
That lake is just breaking all rules, isn't it? It's,
do you know what I heard this week as well?
Go on.
No one
making it free to Carpcast.
Oh, I wish. Oh. You know, as expensive as a syndicate is, no one dropped out this year.
Yeah, not a single pair. Why would you? I mean, what a stock. That lake is unreal. What, maybe 2050s in there? And obviously, Carp Talk dines off the weekly welly whacker, as do we. So I'm sure next week's weekly welly whacker will be in. So, yeah, what's in there? What else is in there this week?
Well, we've got a few. We've got a new 50 from Devon from Emperor Lakes, a £48 common from Swan and Bluebell.
Ah, your lake where you're fishing this year.
Yes. Too nice, but I do intend on getting back down there. I never heard of that fish, to be honest. That's another one to go at.
No, known as the perfect common from Bluebell Swan, £48.5. Also, they pay homage to Team Carp Talk Captain Kev Grout for winning the UK Carp Cup for the how many times in a row?
For the time in a row.
No, probably, check out this week's Carp Talk to find out, yeah. Charlie Capollo recalls his session during the opening week on Nash's Church Pool. I know there's been a few fish caught on the bidding from Church Lake and Copse Lake so far, so yeah, I'll be interested to read about that this week. And also, it's been the opening rounds of the British Carp Angling Championships as the road to Raisbury begins again. Catch it all in this week's Carp Talk.
You know what that needs?
What?
That needs a tense jingle when you say road to Raisbury.
Rotary. Yeah, and Martin Gardner's in there as well. He finishes his session on Yateley with a capture of the snub nose common. What's the competitions this week? Are you entering?
I might do. I'll not win anything, but I just like free stuff. So, £600 worth of Nash Toro rods to give away, along with £150 Tackle Fanatics voucher. That's got to be worth it. Spend it whatever you want from Tackle Fanatics.
We love free stuff, don't we?
It's my favourite four-letter word.
Yeah, and there's, have you ever noticed, I mean, I've watched a few programmes about this, but it's the same people that win competitions, because surprisingly few people bother entering them. So you get, I've seen people on telly where they've got rooms full of like competition prizes, because there's only them that ever enter them. And one of them gave a tip, the way to win competitions is to do the postal entries. So basically, let's say they give away five prizes. One of the prizes will be just for postal entries, and whoever enters by post, they have to do it in competitions by law, because it's like not everybody's got a text or phone or whatever. If you notice on TV, all these ones that are like 35p a minute or 50p a minute to ring up or text a comp, it always says in very tiny print at the bottom, postal entries allowed or whatever, but obviously nobody ever does it. But they keep one of the prizes for postal entries, and there's probably about 10 people enter it, and it's usually the same 10 people. So once you know all these little tricks of the trade, get your postal entries in, and you usually win, because not many people bother.
I think our pals at Carp Talk are going to thank you for this when the mailbag is full of things to sort now.
I've not had a look on the... I'm going to have a look on next week's Carp Talk and see if there's a little bit about postal entries, but I'm going to be entering. But yeah, these serial competition winners, I'm sure.
You're a Nash guy. Have you seen these new Toro rods they speak of?
I haven't, no. They're the new version of the NRXDs. I can say the NRXDs are the best rods I've ever used. I've had them a good few years now. I actually had mine stolen, and I got a new set from the insurance money. And what I did, I just bought the blanks off them and got them made up by one of the top Northwest rod builders, Alan Young. Yes. So I've got custom ones, got my name on and stuff, and I picked all the rings and the Duplon handles and all sorts, and it's the best rod I've ever used. The recovery on the tip is fantastic, and I think the new Toros are kind of a newer version of that, so I'd be interested to see them. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and I've got a fantastic set of rods, so I haven't took any interest in them whatsoever, but I ought to have a little cast with them,
I guess.
Yeah. But they're going to be decent if they're half as good as the NRXDs.
Yeah, I used to use the NRXDs myself, and could smash a distance with them.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's about it for this week. It's a slightly shorter show than normal because we've been on the bank on the Carpcast social. As I said, more of that next week. Check out our Facebook page, because we put a load of live videos up of fish that have been caught. And there was a long video, Julian Cundiff's rig talk, which was fantastic. It's about 45 minutes long, probably cost me £200 in data. so definitely go and check it out. We're sorry we didn't catch a fish while we were live here, and we hope the background at A1 is not too noisy.
Oh no, there's still, what, 1 minute left?
Yep.
If the carp gods want to smile on us right now.
Yeah, well.
In fact, do a carp dance.
I'm going to carp dance behind. Somebody's been doing rain dance all weekend because it was raining. But I'm going to do the carp dance.
Oh dear. That's just going to scare them off.